We are Brightside.
Go with the pleasantries.
Isn't my audio all right? Sorry. Should have said that before. Is my audio good? Cool.
Yeah, seems fine. Yeah, seems okay. Good. Seems good on this side.
Sounds good.
I know how particular you are, and our listeners are very discerning listeners.
Well, I feel like...
Did you hear all that about Steve?
No.
Will you listen?
Oh, honestly, yeah. It's admissions season right now, application season at UW here. So I've been completely tuned out of the podcasting and YouTube world.
Yeah. Oh, it's all good. I'm the same way. I'm like, I've been with everything I got going on. I hardly listen to shows and anything anymore. And, you know, it's funny. I had Michael on a few months ago. Youth man, and I mentioned something about M Wave, and he goes, "Yeah, I'm not doing that anymore." And I was like, "Whoops!" But he had said it on his show. I'm like, "Sorry, buddy." He just laughed. He's like, "He knows. He doesn't care. He doesn't listen to my show either." So,
right?
I listen to it, but I used to listen to it all the time. But it's just not the same anymore. But you know, everybody that's in it and that does it, you can't listen to everybody that you're friends with all the time. It's like you never have time.
Yeah, exactly.
It's crazy.
Yeah.
But
I'm all about the 12 to 15 minute YouTube videos and long, I posted that really long one and just because I wanted to make all the shorter ones and it was the fastest way to do it was to just do the whole thing and then
segment. Yeah. And then you make the small ones out of that.
Yeah. Right. I never have time to sit down and watch or listen to something that's an hour long.
Yeah. So oh yeah.
If I have that get much that time, I'm watching a movie or a TV show.
Right. Yeah. And it's especially, that's why the YouTube following is so much less than the audio. The audio only is like, if I said it's 10 times greater, that's an understatement. It's ridiculous.
Right. Yeah.
You know, it's because people will listen to that. They put it on in the car. They do, you know, and that's how I do it. But it's funny on, like when I first started out, they always tell you like, oh, just make 20 minute podcasts or 20 minute. That's all the attention spans for. I'm like, yeah, but I can't just do that. And then what you find, you know what I mean? Like I tried, go back and look at my early podcasts and they're shorter. It's like, look at me. And I was by myself and I was having trouble doing that.
Yeah.
But people will turn it and make it into what they can, you know, they'll edit it on their own, just be like, oh, I'll listen to part here, here, and here.
Right.
And it's like, you come to find out, just be yourself and the people that are like that, that appreciate that, that's your followers, your listeners. So, it all works, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah. So how you been? We haven't talked since just before, like a 25 hour show. I hit you up after your video there and we'll talk about that in a little bit, but yeah.
It has. It's been a while. Like I said, it's been busy season at work. So I've been a little bit out of touch with a lot of folks, but it's been going really well. You know, you mentioned that video. I finally felt like I've gotten to a bit of a settling point where the theater's almost ready to go. I keep, you know, the projector is obviously the big new thing that I still need to get, but it seems like every time last summer when they were closing out the NZ series JVCs, I was literally minutes away from putting in my order and the hot water heater went out. And I've been sending emails and in the conversation and just kind of locking in on the NZ 700 or the 500 right now. And now the vehicle was in the shop for a week and had to get a new compressor for the air suspension, which is first world problems. I know, but.
Oh God. Yeah.
Yeah.
New projector, my air suspension for my vehicle. It's like, okay, stop.
Yeah. But still, it's like life doesn't want me to get rid of this X790R that I've got, and it's still a really good projector. But yeah,
well, yeah, and you have the Lumigen too.
Yeah,
and that kind of smooths it out a little bit. It makes it not even a priority. It's like, what's your throw distance on the from here?
From like the projector is literally above my desk here, so it's like 18 feet.
Oh, that's a good distance. Yeah,
it is. And you're a long distance. Like I would love to have.
Well, that's a long. That's what I mean. Distance.
Yeah,
long,
oh yeah, yeah, Travis. Yeah. I mean,
that's a distance.
I love how it's tucked away against the back wall. You don't notice it unless you're looking for it. But yeah, I'd love to be using the wider side of the lens instead of the longer throw. You lose light that way, and so.
Yeah. Yeah, so you're probably, 18 feet, and how wide is your screen?
115 inches wide.
That's not the diagonal, that's the width, right?
Right, yep.
Right. So, yeah, that's a pretty good width. So you're throwing, you need a pretty good output on that.
Yeah.
You would, have you looked it up? Like, what are you getting right now for, like, what is it, lumens or nits or whatever? I forget which one they do when you calculate your throw distance and stuff.
Yeah.
What are you getting now?
When Chris Deering came out and calibrated it, we were getting like 60 nits. But I've since then put a new lamp in the projector and have the higher gain material in the screen now too. So I think it's probably upper 60s pushing 70, but like with a 500 or a 700, I could probably get, if mounted in the same spot, even on the longer throw distance, I could still probably get closer to 80, 85.
Yeah.
But like I've been considering moving it, up behind the seats, much tighter, like, I've got my office area back here, and if I move it to the other side of the office area, it'll be close to the seats, but I could get a lot more light out of it that way, being at the wider end of the zoom.
What's the one you have now? The what?
The X790R or the RS540, depending on what grouping you want to go for.
DLA RS540?
Yeah.
You?
Yep.
Yeah. Okay, I'm looking at it right now.
Right.
I just pulled it up. It's 34 pounds, and you're throwing at what you said?
18.8.
So let me put that. 18.8?
Yep.
Lock. And your image size, your aspect ratio is 2.39?
It is 240, but on that, you're on projector central?
Yeah, yeah. I'm putting it in. I want to see what it.
Okay. You want to have it at 16:9 because that's actually that select. Like,
that's what you.
Yeah.
That's what the projector set at, but the Lumigen's going to set it out at. Correct. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. So what's your diagonal on that then? Width, you said one something,
width,
right?
Width is 115.
115. Okay. So we got that.
Yeah.
All right. Now it's saying throw distance 18. Oops. 18.8. I've been doing this a ton. Screen gain, what's your screen gain at?
Right now it's at 1.
Okay.
So nice
screen gain. So this is saying projector central's estimate is saying at 27 foot Lamberts.
Right.
So, yeah, we'll see what the manufacturer says. 32. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
So projector central saying 27, recommended image brightness for rooms with high ambient light. Yeah. That's 27 foot Lamberts.
For all of the projector central, big wigs who are in your listening audience, I would like to request that when you change the projector model number on the calculator, that all your screen and throw distance information sticks. It would make it so much easier to go back forth and compare stuff. And
I just open up multiple pages.
Tabs, yeah.
Just keep doing it. Because I've been, like, that's how I do it, like, for the new theater. I'm looking at all the different, because you're trying to get that foot Lamberts up.
Yeah.
I'm trying to get into the mid-30s.
Right.
You know, this projector here, at my room now is doing like, I want to say it's like right around yours. I think it's 28, 29.
Yeah.
Even in this room, which is a shorter throw distance, but.
So you've got a higher gain screen, right?
Mm-mm. Mine's one.
It's one.
Just, okay. Yeah. Mine's, what you call it? Stewart.
Okay. For whatever reason, you had the 1.3.
Mm-mm. Okay. No, it's funny because Jim, my projector guy, he's like, nope, in this room. He's like, especially in a completely enclosed room. He's like, you don't want that. He's like, it causes more. The more gain you go, the more issues you can end up with.
Yeah.
Maybe not so much in this situation, like anything under three from what I've learned since, it's like anything under three, over three, you're going to see hot spotting and you can end up with some issues. But
yeah,
but under three is like, if you can be at one, that's ideal.
Yeah.
Right. Because otherwise anything over one, you're making up for what your projector can't do with throw distance.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So. But yeah, it's like now, like yours, for instance, like at 27 foot Lamberts, if you went to 1.3, you're at 35.
Yeah.
Which is pretty decent for HDR, even at that throw distance.
Absolutely. You know,
that's pretty good.
I would much rather though stay at one with my screen and move my projector in to. Yep. I think it's like 12. I can basically, if I put it just about a foot behind the seats and then up, we're basically, I mean, not a foot, like about 2 or 3 feet behind the seats and up on the, you know, where it's at now.
I just moved it up 8 inches. It went to 29.
8 inches?
I just took it to 18 and it went to 29 foot Lambert.
See, if I go to like 14, it's another decent place that I can. You know,
all right, let me put in 14 here. That's what's fun about it. You can play with this stuff.
Yeah.
14 goes to 33.
Yeah. That's kind of where, you know, I'm starting.
That's the sweet spot. Like I said, the mid 30s is kind of what you want for HDR. Cause anything more than that is really for anything more than that is for, ambient light. Well, right, where your lights are on and stuff. Because that's even on Projector Central saying recommended image brightness for rooms with high ambient light is 33 foot lamp.
Right.
You know, they're saying with high ambient light.
But
if you've got controlled lighting in that room, you can go lower.
However, and especially with the JVCs, if you have that extra capability, you can close down the aperture and increase your contrast ratio with that. So there are reasons to go, you know, over what the maximum, you know, what the ratings are, but I'll be happy to get to that spot.
Yeah. Okay. Actually, I just put it for, I had to lock the image size. So I locked it at 115. What happened is I shrunk the throw distance and it shrunk the screen.
Yep.
So I locked the screen at 115 width. And I went to 14 and that's at 30 foot Lamberts now.
Yeah.
So that's probably why when I moved it 6 inches, it shrunk the screen too. So you got a better jump, but and that's the other thing. You have to lock and unlock certain things. Like just leave it. Mm-hmm. Why would I shrink my screen? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to check something here.
Yeah.
But I love playing with this stuff and it's like what's funny is I started to find like go in between the JVCs, the Sonys, literally the, I almost said the Runcos, the Barcos and stuff like that. There was like JVC. I found one instance where the JVC stopped, like it didn't go over like a certain size where other ones would and, you know, different, you know, ranges. It was weird, but yeah, it's, I mean, the stuff what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's,
I like that, the screen stuff. I liked, you know, your video of the screen and the weave and this stuff. And it's funny because you look at like the weave is tighter and you're going to be sitting closer to it. What is funny to me is like people are like, oh, it's so much more expensive. Yeah. But you're buying a smaller screen.
Right.
You're not buying that tight weave and doing like a 200 inch screen because nobody's sitting that close to a 200 inch screen.
Yep.
Right. So you can get away with, and that's how like it goes back and forth with cost effectiveness and stuff like that. And
yeah,
which is a lot like the throw of a projector. You mm-hmm. don't need all that light. You don't need a light cannon if you're only throwing it like 18, 16, 14 feet.
Yep.
You need a certain, you know, you need a certain amount. So it's a, the combination and it, and that's the entire system is the combination,
right?
You know?
Yeah, it's, it is. It's a, it, it's all a puzzle and you can complete the puzzle in many different ways. You just have to find the right pieces that you want, that are, you know, that are important to you and put together the right puzzle. You know, you're a Sony projector guy. I'm a JVC guy. It doesn't matter.
I see. Here's the thing. I am not a Sony projector guy. That is what I have.
Right. Okay.
Like what I happen to have right now. Everybody says that. It's like, if you have something, it's like, that's what you are. No, I've been in this game so long. Yeah. It's like, this is the only Sony projector I have ever owned.
Okay.
But it's literally the one I bought just before I started podcasting.
Right.
So that's all anybody knows. See,
a year and a half ago at Cedia, though, we were talking and you were telling me why I didn't have to spend extra for a JVC and I could get it with the Sony, and it really seemed like you were very, very pro Sony. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with a Sony either. I've been tempted by the Bravia 8. I just think that's probably a little bit out of my range for my budget.
Yeah.
But
the thing is it's what I was saying is, and you and I kid around about all sorts of crap like that. I think after Cedia, we had a text exchange that was like hours long. I don't even think it was whole theater, but whatever it was, but it was that my thing is always like, and not with you, but other people, oh, you can't do that. Yeah, you can.
Yeah.
People think it's like you can't do it with other, you know, they get so fixated on a product that they're like, you can't do this with another product. Right. Yeah, you can. You can do it in different, to your point, like you can do it in different ways. Yeah. There's other ways of taming that beast, whatever you want to call it. Right. And that's all I always feel like when people are like, oh, you gotta do it this way. No, it's like you can do it this way. And it's, you know, just trying to bring the other side.
The only thing there's only one thing that there's no options on it, and that's having a scoped screen.
Right.
Yeah. If you want to do it right, you have to go with a scoped screen.
Yeah, you have to. You know what's funny is you said that to me the other day, and I'd forgotten. I've researched my new theater ad nauseum, like before the house was built, before everything. Now there's been a delay. I've forgotten how much I've researched, how much I know about my theater that I haven't even gotten yet. Right.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there and as soon as you said scope screen, I was like, and you were joking, but I said it back to you. I was like, wait a minute. Cause my theory, it's not even a theory, but my contention is you just go, it's the wall,
right?
It's not the screen. It's not what you desire. It's the wall. Right. And I designed the wall, like I said, about like the height. The first thing I said to you, 9-foot ceilings and this. And I'm like, should I go scope? Because then I went with I'm like, no, wait a minute. And then I had to do the math over. I'm like, no, I'm only going to have a few inches on either side and I'm going to be able to go top to bottom. I'm like, all right, good. Whew. Right. All right. This is what I'm doing. Cause even that I'd forgotten all the work I'd already done and you just say in scope, I'm like, maybe he's right. Cause I'm thinking, yeah, maybe you should go this way. Cause I could still have the height. Cause what I never want in my situation is I never want too much wall either to the side or to the top and bottom.
Right.
Right. Because then it looks, you could have a 160-inch screen, but if you got a ton of wall around it, it's not going to look as big.
Right.
Whereas you would be even, and I've thought of doing this too in my theater, and you see this in commercial theaters, you taper the walls in, so the screen looks bigger, right? So, and you can do that in your personal room where it's like, all right, I want to save a little money on screen size. I'm going to sit this close, but what I'm going to do is, and you could taper it in a foot over, like the room could only be 15 feet long. But if you tape it, the front of the room is 14 feet wide and the back of the room is 15 feet or 16 feet wide, right? And so you're tapering a foot on either side. most people would never notice that.
Right.
But the optical illusion of your screen being huge from where you're sitting, you'd be like, oh my God, that's, you know, and you would never notice it. And that goes on in the theaters all the time. And it's also a way to stagger it so that your speakers are angled to you correctly.
And it's great for acoustics as well.
Yeah.
It's fantastic for the acoustics because it creates fewer, you know, or no right angles.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, I've been I really was toying with the idea of the ceiling that way.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is I don't have enough height to do it.
Right.
You know, that's where you can really quote unquote shine if I had a 10-foot ceiling, I would definitely do it. I'd bring the front down and the back of the room would be like the front would be at like 8.5 and the top of the screen would be right there.
Yep.
And then the back of the room would be like 9.5. And then most people would never know that, but it would just feel like, oh my God, that's so big. It's this, that. And then you have your stadium seating, which is going along with it.
Yep.
You know, and it's an optical illusion that, you know, people might notice, they might not notice, but it gives that experience of like, wow, that thing's huge, you know?
Yep.
And you know, it's fun little tricks you can do.
Yeah.
And then some people notice, some people don't.
Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like the other thing too, is you play with stuff, you do construction elements like that, but then you play with it as well with the lighting and the wall material and the panels and, you know, the flats, if you're going to use something like that. And, you know, you play with that. It just looks so nice and so classy that no one's paying any attention to the size of the walls or the angle of the corners or any of that because the room just feels right.
Right. Yeah. And what's funny is I've known you long enough and watched your theater evolve. And it's like all the different, I remember, it was a couple of years ago, you did that panel thing from Amazon.
Yeah.
Remember you were doing, you had that, but now I'm looking at your room behind you and it's like, it's gorgeous. The artwork you have on the walls and, you still have them?
that's what that still is back there.
Oh, is it really?
Yeah.
That's the artwork?
Well, yeah. That's the same artwork isn't video anyway, but that's the same artwork on those two panels. But all of those thin black panels, that's how it's all blacked out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's right, too. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, your room in the seating.
Yeah.
You used to have couches in there.
I used to have, like, a big, L-shaped couch that was killing my back. I would wake up, the credits would roll, and I would realize just what a
great
ball,
movie,
what
Travis,
a ball
great movie.
Of jelly.
I'd wake up after the movie.
Yeah.
Whoops.
Just, and I was like literally having a lot of real serious back pain. And I got the Valencia seats and they're not nappers, but they're firm, but they have that, they're great support. They have adjustable lumbar.
Yeah, that's so important.
And within the first couple of weeks of having these seats in here, my back pain was virtually gone.
Yeah.
Like I've been shocked. So you don't sit down on them. And these are the Monza carbon fiber. It's one of the newer models that they have. It's a more.
From which company?
From Valencia.
Is it? Oh, it is Valencia.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. They're the ones with the carbon fiber wrap and the LED lighting and all that kind of stuff. And they're not, you're not going to sink into them. And, you know, it's not like this cozy luxury like some of the other ones that they have. They're, you know, it's a sleeker, modern look.
I like them.
And it's great support. And yeah, it holds me in the position that I need to be to watch a movie without being in pain when it's over. I don't fidget through a movie or a TV show like I used to. It's just fantastic. I've been digging it.
Yeah. It's, I've always been like big into that. Like I don't want to say comfort. Mm-hmm. Of course you want to be comfortable. You don't want it to hurt you. But at the same time, that to me is comfortable. Yep. It's like, if it's not hurting me, then I could sit through. I want to be paying attention.
Yeah.
I don't want to be slouching back in my seat. Mm-hmm. I like when I recline, if I recline at all in my seat, I'm going to sleep.
Yep.
You know, and I'll go and I'll do that. I'll go into my theater. I'll put Star Wars on or something that I know throughout, put it on reference.
Yep.
And take a nap.
Yeah.
And everybody, like, you know, my wife and family, they're like, did you sleep? They know. They're like, oh, did you nap? I was like, oh yeah, I was out for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
And it's like, but it is blaring, but that's comfortable to me, you know, but that's if the seat's back. If I'm going, if you know, a first run movie I haven't seen yet, that seat is not getting reclined.
Yeah.
I am sitting upright. I want to be paying attention. It's like I have a couch upstairs to sleep on. I have a bed to sleep on. That's where you go to sleep. I'm in my theater. It's 100% attention on the screen.
Yeah.
You know, don't get me wrong. It's a nice dark place to be alone and you just put the seat back and fall asleep. Yep. But, I want to look at those Valencia theater scene. I want to look at which ones are those with the name of them again.
I'll look it up. The Monza carbon fiber is what I have.
Oh, Jesus. Yeah. They are beautiful.
Yeah.
What's the, I don't have to ask you. I'm on the site right now. Sure. I want to, cause my thing for my theater, I've got 14 foot wide.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm trying to stagger.
Right.
I'm trying to find something that's thin enough. And I think these ones might have been one of the ones that are pretty.
Yeah. Narrow. These are the exact same width as the Valencia, the Barcelona, I think is the model, which is the ones with the low back and the really modern looking ones.
I think, Shane has those ones, right?
Yep. Yep.
Shane has those and those are really nice. Yeah. I don't like the low back. I want a lower headrest because I want, but we're you and I are tall enough that I think like the seats I have now, the headrest ends, the top of the back of the seat is 42 inches off the floor.
Okay.
Which can be deceiving because it depends on where the seat is in relation to that. Right.
Yep.
So a lot of the ones that I've been looking at, I'm trying to come in around that 43 inches. But if the seat's firmer and it's higher, then it doesn't matter. But I want my ears over the back of the seat.
Yep.
You know?
Yeah.
But at the same time, those ones like that Shane had, they are really low. They're nice for that, but they do come up if you want the headrest.
Yep.
But those are super expensive too. And they're wide.
They're the exact same as these.
Are they really?
Because I had it down to the Monza carbon fiber and the Barcelona. And our room is like 124 inches wide. So regardless, to get three in here, we had to go with, a love seat on the side and then a single seat.
I see that.
And which is perfect because Rebecca didn't want to give up the ability to lie down. Cause she enjoys napping.
I get it. Lie down. She doesn't like it. I got it. It's a family show. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So
and they sell the armrest though too, right?
Not the specific one. You can get one. You can get one that'll work, but it's not the same leather and it's not quite the same match. But yes, you can get it. The Barcelona and these are the same width. And it's so nice to not have to walk sideways around the side of it to get back there like I did with the couch because.
Right.
We ordered that couch the night we closed on the house and I had mismeasured and it was, then 8 months later when it finally showed up in the whole pandemic furniture delays. I got there, they brought it downstairs and set it all up. I'm like, oh, oops.
Yeah. Yeah. So these ones are 134 inches wide. 134 and a half inches. I'm trying to come in at the 120.
Okay.
Cause I got the three.
It's 134.
I'm trying to do four.
Oh, you're trying to do
four. Cause I want to do, I'm trying to do four across and I want them centered.
Yeah.
So they're not, they're not like justified to one side or the other. So, but even that at, that gives me 34 inches, which gives you roughly 17 inches on each side.
Yeah.
Which I can live with. I have less than that now.
Yeah.
Or no, I think I have 18 now in my little theater with three. And it's funny. I say that and people will be like writing it. Oh, no. You need 3 feet on each side. No, I don't.
To be ADA compliant, you need 3 feet on each side.
Right. Yeah. It was, if I start charging admission and there's a line.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
But the other thing is I don't need it because that's my false wall. I still have another foot past that. Mm-hmm. Actually, I have another over a foot past that is where you won't even see the speakers. Right. It's going to be speaker cloth. So the speak, and then maybe it's not as ideal for the person sitting right there on the ends. But it's better than what I have now.
Sure.
Because even the person sitting on the end is going to be a good, well, you got a foot and a half. So almost 3 feet from the speakers because they're going to be staggered anyways.
Yep.
So that's not the end of the world. And from the ideal seating, you know, the middle two seats, it's going to be great.
Yeah.
Which is where I'll be sitting most of the time.
Right.
So I'm not worried about that. But if I can get to the 120, gives a little bit more aisle space on the sides. Yep. And, you know, you can, you know, just makes it. And then I think in the middle, the front row, cause that's my second row is the prime seating. My front row, I might go with same idea, 4 seats, but the middle one would be like what you have. It'll be a little narrower.
Yep.
And it'll be the love seat in the middle. So like kids can curl up there or whatever, but same idea.
Or do two love seats and get two of the armrests that you can stuff in there. And that would save you the width of two armrests.
Or you just do the whole couch and buy the armrests for the whole thing. Yeah. And then anybody can sit in the front row. You can, but it narrows it down.
Yeah.
Maybe stagger the wall. People will tune in to see. Yeah. I have ideas. Things are going to happen. Things are going to change.
Or go, you know, if your main seat's in your third row, go with three in the front row. Go with three seats.
The main seat's in the second row. The back row, the third row is a bar.
Okay, that's what I meant. Your main seat's in the second row. Go three in the front row. Then you have a good center seat for when you want that.
Yeah, in the front row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So, yeah,
again, it's options.
So many options. Yeah. And it'll be fun when I get to it. It's like, and I'm going to start the theater out. Mm-hmm. Seating is the last thing I'm going to be putting in there.
You've got those commercial seats.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, my theater in Iowa, I bought a row of four commercial cinema seats from one of the theaters that was closing down. They were relatively new. They had just put in all new seating like 6 months before they closed. I don't know why. When I mounted those onto a flat surface and got rid of kind of that little bit forward lean, they were super comfortable. I didn't mind sitting back there at all. They were put in there as overflow seating as my fourth or third row. They were pretty comfortable.
Overflow.
Yeah.
Standing room only, people, tickets, get your tickets.
Well, that was for like Super Bowl party or, you know, cause usually 9 days out of 10, it was Rebecca and I in there watching a movie, or sometimes Wilco would be in there with us.
Oh, it's 9.9 days out of 10. Yeah. It's just you guys.
When we would have, you know, well, the Central Iowa had a really nice active community of home theater folks. And we used to do almost monthly movie parties at someone's house. And so there were several times when I'd have 7 or 8 guys in there and no one, like that was a tiny room, but it never felt cramped.
Yeah.
Somehow.
Yeah. It's somehow. Yeah. I've had in my theater, which is under 11 feet wide. Mm-hmm. It's like 10, just under 11 feet wide.
Yeah.
It is. At its inception, it was just over 16 feet long. It is now even shorter because I've stuffed the back. It's, you know, I took almost a foot away and stuffed it. And then put up shelving so that all my knickknacks and stuff are in the back. But at one point I had like for one Super Bowl, I had like 16 people in there between the seats. And then you'd take folding chairs, line them up along the side. I had a bar area in the back. Me and my buddies are standing back there. Like the first Super Bowl, the Patriots won in 2000. It was January 2002.
Yeah.
I had literally just finished the theater and I think we had 14 people in there. And it was just like, you know, we were thinking like bury the Bears when they lost, and when they lost to Green Bay a few years earlier, we're like, oh, this will be fun. And then they freaking won.
Yeah.
And we're like, I'm like, don't break my room.
Right.
Yeah. I just finished it a week earlier.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, nice. But yeah, you can, it's fun, but that's fun too. It's an enclosed environment, you know, it's a control light, no windows, no, not, it's a, literally it's a theater, but you're all stuffed in there for an event like that. And I've done Super Bowls where it was just neutral. Like we didn't have a game, a dog in the fight.
Right.
And it's still a blast, you know?
Absolutely. It's fun. I don't care about the NFL, but I would have Super Bowl parties every year when we were, you know, in Iowa, just cause it was a good excuse to get a bunch of friends together and eat and drink and hang out. And we'd have the game would be on in the theater. It would be on in the living room. It would be on in the sunroom. And there would, we'd have like 30, 40 people over, just groups watching here, groups watching there, other groups not paying any attention at all. And
yeah. And it's, and that's, I mean, again, that's what I plan on eventually in my new one. It's I have the theater, but outside the theater it's gonna have the game room, it's gonna have a media area with big screen TV, a bar area,
right on.
And again, and now I'm like, I said this on the show the other day and I'm not even joking, it's like I designed this theater and then by the time I'm done with the house I'm not gonna have any friends left. Like I'll be like, all my friends are around the world.
Yeah.
It's like I got this really nice area, but I've pissed everybody off that I know locally. It's like, whoops.
Yeah, I'll come out. I'll come out and watch a movie.
Yeah, I know. That'll be great. And it's, speaking of that, coming out, you say like you lived in Iowa and your M-Wave is in, you know, Kansas City. And I, years ago, my son's getting married in Moab in October. And the reason I say that is I went to Moab years ago because I'm huge into mountain biking, cycling and all that. And Moab is like the world known mecca for mountain biking.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Kind of where it started and everything. At least when I was reading about it way back in the 90s.
Yeah.
And that was the place to go, right? And it's like, if you got to go there, you're like, you've been to Moab. You're like, oh, yeah. It's like now you're serious. Right. And I feel like that's what the Midwest is for home theater. It's like,
it kind
of
is.
It's the mecca of home theater.
Well, you know, you get snow and it gets cold there. And Seattle, we get snow sometimes or something. Let's take a look at the weather where I just moved to Seattle from a few years ago. Today, the high is 27 and the low is -1. It's like there are days next week where the high is 7, or this weekend, high is 7, low -1, high is 6. Like it is brutally cold and you just don't leave the house. And like right now it says it's 24, but the wind chills feels like 12. Like it's, it's awful. And
well, that's here right now. It's 23 and it feels like 14.
Yeah. But you get in Iowa, and Iowa's just getting into the cold part of the year. There'll be weeks where it doesn't get above zero even during the day. And
it's, you know what's just, so funny? I love that stuff. I really do. No, I love it.
No.
I work in it and I love it. Yeah. It's like I don't like it for work, but I love, see, and that's part of what I love about home theater and why I kind of did it even in the '80s. It's like growing up, it's like, I love isolation. Mm-hmm. I used to want, I still kind of do, especially now with this project and I'm pissing everybody off and nobody likes me anymore. I want to like move to Maine, build like this is ideas I used to draw and design when I was a kid in like a teenager. And it was like, I wanted a log cabin. Right.
Yeah.
But from the road, it would look like gravel driveway, nice log cabin, stone fireplace, but underneath, like, would be in it. Home theater wasn't even invented yet, but I was like, I would have like not a bunker, but it would be tech because I love reading Popular Mechanics. I loved all that stuff. And I couldn't even imagine the stuff that we have today.
Right.
Back then.
Yeah.
But that's like in my head now. I'm like, damn, imagine I'd probably be there if I knew what I know now back then, like, oh my God, I could do this in the base. But I always wanted people to be like, it's like rural, like nice little, you know, warm light by the fire. You look through the window, you'd be like, oh, it's snowing like crazy. But here I am in the basement with a computer, podcast and a giant theater, blah, 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 blah. And nobody knows. I love that stealthy stuff.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I would love something like that. Like I'm very much a homebody and I'd love. Yeah. I, you know, I, we did it in Iowa, and I got into it when I was in Iowa just because there are months of the year that you don't want to leave the house at all, if at all possible. And you know, I was always into surround sound and stuff. So I just kept building it and it kept growing and growing. And then finally I had a house that had a room where I could just have it there. And it was just, you know, it was perfect. And now we're out here and the weather's pretty decent. I mean, it's so much better.
It's rainy.
Yeah. It's not though. I mean,
it's not. That's the room. That's the stereotype. I mean, of the area,
it rains in Seattle. Absolutely. But it's precipitation. So when you're getting snow, we're getting rain. Summer, right. I shouldn't even say this out loud, but like summers in Seattle and fall in Seattle are, it's the most beautiful weather I have ever known.
Really?
It's never so hot. It's always, you know, it's beautiful. It's sunny. It's warm. It's not oppressively humid and swampy like Iowa would get in the summers. That's the flip side of it is air condition your theater in the Midwest because it's going to be miserable in the summer. We don't have air conditioning here.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds like England.
Mm-hmm.
Cause that's like Steve's like that over in England. Yeah. He goes, we don't have an air conditioner for like the 3 days of the year that it's hot. Yep. I'd be like, yeah, I'd buy the air conditioner.
Yep.
Like I hate heat.
Yeah.
I hate the heat.
Yeah. See, I do too. But even for the 3 days it's hot, here's what I like fresh air more than I hate heat. As long as it's not swampy and humid like the Midwest was. But like,
the dry
for the heat. for the three or four days of the year when we'd be like, oh, we should get a mini split just to make it more pleasant in here for those few days. I wouldn't want the temptation of turning it on the rest of the summer because I love having the windows open. We're like a block and a half off of the water. So we get that cool salt air breeze coming through. It's just, it's heaven. We love it here. And we had never really spent any time here. We just decided, well, maybe what about Seattle? Okay. We were there one time for a few days. Sure. And that's where we are now. So
that's awesome.
Yeah.
So nothing drew you there other than let's go somewhere.
Yeah. There were
some, did you have work opportunities?
So it happened during the pandemic. We knew we wanted to get back to the West Coast because I had lived in San Francisco for a decade. And then moved back to Iowa to help my dad. And we knew we wanted to get back to the West Coast. My son, who he's 18 now, so this put him at like 14 or whatever. During that first year of the pandemic, he had come out here to Seattle to visit his mom, who lived here at the time. And then it was just a mess in Iowa when it came time to start school again. And we were just kind of like, just enroll him out there and we'll shift our focus. And so that's what we did. And we ended up here. We had been here I had been here a few times for work, but never really explored. A couple summers before that in like 2019, Rebecca and I had brought Wilco out here to spend the summer with his mom and we spent a few extra days and we like rented a yurt and went and hiked at Rainier and, you know, just hung out and saw it. We were like, oh, that was cool. And then we went back to Iowa and started looking at California again and stuff. And now we're just like, oh man, we're so glad we ended up here and not there. Not anything wrong with California. But we just love it here. The mountains and water in from, you know, if we go up to our bedroom, we can see the Olympic Mountains, the Cascades and the Sound and all of it. It's nuts.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not it's funny how like John's like that, bounces around.
Yeah.
I'm a homebody. Like I don't want to leave the area. I don't mind moving from a town. I did. I moved out of the town I grew up in, and I moved for west because it's cheaper. Yeah. You get further outside of the city, outside of Boston, it's cheaper. So I wanted to get more value out of my money.
Sure,
you know, do more. You know, be able to have in where I grew up. Franklin is they have the train to the town, to Boston.
Yeah.
It was skyrocketing when I was there. It's like what we paid to live to move here in 01 with, we ended up with, you know, almost 4 acres of land. We have ton of, you know, you have to have 200 feet of frontage to build a house. So you got all this space around you. It's like really nice. Yep. That's what I want. For the money I paid, I would have paid like the same money for like an eighth of an acre.
Right.
And been in this, you know, that's crammed what
we
did into
when
like,
we moved from Iowa to Seattle. Like, no.
Yeah. I'm like, no, I got away from that because I'm not even, and not Franklin's the city life, but I'm not like that. I like the space. I like, you know, again, like I said, seclusion.
we're a walking contradiction. Like I loved living in San Francisco. I lived in Marin County. And it's just gorgeous. Again, water. Hills, ocean, wonderful weather. And my dad's health was declining. So, you know, my brother was established in his job in Colorado. So I was freelancing. It was easy for me to go back to Iowa and be around and be there for him. And I wound up there a lot longer than I had expected. That was like 2004, but you know, I wouldn't say that we moved around a lot and we're definitely staying here for a while and might retire somewhere tropical or something at some point. But like, you know, we don't want to move around a lot. And, but I'm a homebody. I don't necessarily need isolation from other people, right. But I'll not leave the house for a week if I can. You know, if there's food here and Kaleidoscape and I'm set.
Yeah.
But like we also love live music and we like to hike and that's all really close by. You know, we just bought tickets to two different shows in May that are in the same building in two different clubs and they're two nights apart. And we're going to see Ani DeFranco, in a couple of weeks. And, you know, we go to all the festivals and stuff. So we go to a lot of shows, but other than that, you know, we love being around near that kind of stuff, but we also love staying home.
Right. Yeah. I feel like I kind of have the best of both worlds here. I'm on like a little over an hour out of Boston.
Yeah.
You know, I could get to Providence in like half hour.
Yeah.
And you know, I'm around enough city. I can get to it if I want to. I can get to shows. I'm 3 hours out of New York City.
Yeah.
You know, I can, if I really want to do anything like that, but I also have, you know, you come off the highway. I drive, it's like, there's this one particular road to get to my property, either of these two properties right now. And it's all like overgrown, especially in the summer. And it's like, I've said it ever since, but it's like pulling into Wakanda.
Yeah.
It's like you come off of the highway and then you get off this little road and you go through this and you're like, what? And it's all private. Everything's just woodsy.
Nice.
And it's like, you go back through that. And now here you go. There's pavement. We have pavement everywhere, sure. But I mean, wide highways, we don't even have, the town I'm in right now, we don't even have a traffic light. We don't have a grocery store.
I grew up.
You have to go out of the town for that.
I grew up in a town of 48 people. And then, around middle school. Jeez. Yeah. When my folks got divorced, we moved 10 miles away to the town where we were bused for school. And that town had one stoplight. And I think they've since lost it. I think they've removed it because it was just
Who has it? Where'd it go? They lost it.
But yeah, so I mean, we went from a town of 48 people to about 2,200 at the time, and we could get cable, and we were so excited because you know, cable TV back when you had 2 through 13 and A through E, if you flipped the other box over, but, you know, it's like, geez, long time ago.
Yeah. 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 It's like, well, growing up, like I said, I was in Franklin and that was a small town when my parents moved there. They moved out of Needham, which was even close. You know, they did the same thing I did. Yeah. And when I ended up leaving, people were like, why are you going out there? The grocery stores are so far away. I'm like, my wife and I were living in an apartment in the center of town. To get to the nearest grocery store with the traffic, it was like 20 minutes.
Yep.
And I mean, it's right there. It's like, I could probably walk it in a half hour.
Yeah.
But it would take me 20 minutes, get in the car, pull out, and you sit in traffic. You get, now all the lights you went through, you pull in, get your groceries, you go home, right? So 20 minutes there, do your shopping, 20, and it takes me like, takes me 15 minutes to get to the grocery store, but I haven't stopped.
Right.
Yeah. It's like, yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, I just drive there and I drive back. Yeah. And it's, so it's, everybody's, you think it's like, oh, it's ridiculous, so far away. Well, it is further away, but it actually takes me less time to get there.
Yep.
And
time,
and you plan accordingly too.
Time in a vehicle is always much better if you're in motion versus sitting at traffic and stoplights. Absolutely. Totally agree.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And then, like I said, the other thing is, because it's another town over, you don't think like, oh, it's right there, I'll just go. I don't have, you plan accordingly. You stock up.
Yep.
You know, and whereas in a town where it's like, it's right there, I'll just shoot down the street.
Yep.
You ain't shooting anywhere.
Yep.
You know, cause yeah. You never need, I mean, yeah, you could shoot there at midnight when nobody's on the road, but who goes and shoots out at midnight?
Yep.
It's like, it's, oh, I need it for dinner. Can you get me a can of tomato sauce? Yep. Yeah. Can we have something other than tomato sauce tonight?
Let's order pizza.
Yeah, exactly.
Let them drive. So. Yeah.
But, yep. But yeah.
Yeah. But no, so, you know, to get back on the theater topic, you talked about watching the evolution of mine.
Yeah.
And like, I enjoy that aspect of it. And it came together relative, like, I always wonder what would happen if I had more patience and more of that all at one budget and just like to say, this is a room. I'm going to build it. It's going to be a theater. And here's my list of equipment that I'm going to get and put in there versus mine have always been very like, I put this room up and I like had the screen and some speakers and all my stuff that I had brought with me from Iowa. And then I started swapping things out and then I started blacking the room out and then we swapped the seating and like, it's like this constant evolution. And like, there was no acoustic plan because I still didn't know there when you're at the phase of building a room and you're doing your acoustic plan, I still had no idea what equipment was going to end up in here. I had no intention of going with Atmos. I was just going to have the bed layer, but then now guess who has four Atmos channels, you know? And it's like,
yeah,
an acoustic plan would have been thrown out the window after the first year because of all the changes that had happened. And I've just been, you know, and in some ways I'd love to just draw it all up, build it and enjoy it. But in other ways, I think it becomes better because, you know, I get the stuff that I like and I put it in and then I adjust accordingly. And I fix things specifically in reality instead of in a computer simulation beforehand.
Yep.
Do I know which one would end up being better? Nope. Don't care.
Nope.
This sounds great.
Yeah.
Sounds great.
Don't look back.
Love the picture. We enjoy the crap out of this room. But, you know, I'm also then jealous of you sitting here going, you know, building your room from scratch to be a theater instead of retrofitting into an existing space. Like, I'm really jealous of that aspect of it.
Yeah, don't be. I had to build a house to do it. Jesus. It's like, but no, but I have done it that way. And it's like I said, even when I started this process, we were looking at possibly buying. Right.
Yeah.
And you go around and even from the outside, I'm like, okay, what's that basement going to look like? And what can I do? Even before walking through the door, you already have an image in your head. And that's part of the fun of home theater is regardless if you're doing it the way I'm doing it at the moment or you do it your way, these aren't supposed to be in the house.
Right.
Right. And what we've learned over the years, you know, meaning people like yourself and me and a bunch of our listeners that have been doing this for decades. And what you've learned over the years is going to not only improve the experience in the theater, but it improves the experience for the rest of the house. Yes. You know, and it's like right now, the rest of my house suffers when I go to reference, but it's all of that stuff. And everything you just said is what I've been saying to people. It's like, even if you could afford just like, you know, day one, you woke up one day and said, I want a home theater and you had the disposable income to just have it done. You wouldn't even know what you have. Right. You wouldn't appreciate it. And it's the process. And like I was saying, like, I'm like watching you and watching the evolution of your theater. It's like, you're never done.
Right.
You're not done now. You know, a year from now, there'll be different things. There'll be different features. And because that's part of what got us to where we are now.
Yeah.
And I say that with confidence. I'm like, you, there's no way you're ever gonna, like, knowing you, knowing your theater, watching it progress, there's no way you're ever going to go, no, I'm done.
I want to so badly.
It's impossible.
I want
to. But that's not what it is. Yeah. If you wanted to, you would have been done a long time ago at the bed layer, or you would have been done here. But it's our pursuit of pulling more out of the content, of getting improvements, because you'll sit there for like 3 months and go, you'll find a flaw, guaranteed. And you'll want, and it could be the littlest thing. Yeah. And that's the funniest thing that you argue with people. Oh, it's only a 1% increase. Yeah, but I found it and I want to get rid of it.
See, that's what I don't know, is because I've never just bought it, moved in and had it versus like, it's that, it's in my nature now that it's always evolving, but you know, I want to be done with this. I want the big thing I want to do is build a door to close the room off so I can use it when, you know, other people are elsewhere in the house. Mm-hmm. But like, I've got new subs coming from Next Level Acoustics. And I still need to get the control system for the Seymour masking system, so that I can automate it with Home Assistant and stuff. And my smart blinds. But other than that, like that, the stuff you see behind me, listeners, imagine you're seeing stuff behind me.
Yeah. Seats.
I have no complaints with anything back here.
No.
And I don't know.
But there's additions. There's things to improve the experience. There's remotes. Like you said, there's remotes. There's always something.
Those and are little, because are they though? Ripping because stuff out and starting over, like, you know, getting,
but
new
that's
remote,
why it's called a rabbit hole, buddy. Yeah. You get a new remote system and you're like, oh, but I could do this. And all of a sudden you'll be like, people like us, you'll get a new remote system or you'll get the masking system. And all of a sudden, like, 5 years from now, like Chris will be like, oh, we got all these new motors. It's quieter. Oh, I gotta have that. And then it's like, and it's got a better depth and it's whatever it is. Yeah. It, one thing leads to the other because you're only as strong as your weakest link. And for us, it's like, we're always checking every link, and it could be like, oh, I got this new remote system that can do this, this and this. Oh, but it doesn't work with I need the blinds to go with it, or I need this, or my seats are going to do this, or whatever it is. It's like, there's always something, because as much as we love the content, you're an artist, as much as you love the content, you're always looking, how do I get more out of that content? How do I improve the experience sitting here? And we're never happy to sit still. You know, we sit down and we'll watch a movie, but like, to your point, like, I can do 20 minutes here. If I'm going to sit down and watch something, if I got 2 hours to kill, I'm watching a movie. Mm-hmm. It's hard for us. Todd and I say it all the time. Like, when are we ever going to stop? Never, never. You won't stop.
I'm trying to stop. I'm trying to get there. I feel like I'm really close. Cause
so did I.
here's my, what my idea is, and what I like, my master plan, if you want to call it that. I want to get this theater, get those things I just mentioned, the projector upgrade to this decade, subs, but then I just want to enjoy it. And then when it comes time and I'm able to retire, I want to move somewhere tropical and I want to set up a small little boutique theater and run just with my stuff. And have like a hi-fi listening lounge on the other side of it as the lobby. Yeah. And maybe a little cafe in the middle or whatever. And I want to have, you know, like the vinyl hi-fi bars out here are really cool. Yeah. I want to have one of those with my two channel setup, and I have a theater on the other half. And I just want to be that guy who just watches movies and listens to records until I kick it.
So yeah, exactly. And it sounds like you, basically what you described is what I'm trying to do for my basement. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm going to have that stuff in the basement, and you can do a little bit of like video game, and you can do like two channel. You can you can have the media TV with like big screen TV with the sectional around it,
yep.
A bar area with TVs over it, all of that. And then you can go into the theater, but you can tune the environment to whatever you want to do that at that time.
Right.
But that's what I want in the basement. That's what I want to your point. That's to me is like, that's retirement.
Yeah.
Right. And it's like, just go downstairs, and that's all I want to do. I'll go and what I do for a living, I can go out, paint a few cars, come home, and go right to the basement and do whatever I want to do.
But see, I don't want to do it in my house. I want to do it. I want to have
have a business.
A business. A community.
But it doesn't have to make money.
Center, it's like, that's like a pay what you can type thing. And come on in. Oh, you want to watch a movie? Sure. $10. Or not even $10. Like, Give me $3.
Whatever you want.
Buy a soda and a popcorn, whatever that might be. And just like have it be, a place to be a gathering place. I've been talking to him since before the strike last year or the year before, like when Heretic was getting ready to come out, I think. Scott Beck and Brian Woods. Who did Quiet Place and 65. And I just watched Heretic finally last night. It's amazing. They're Iowa guys. And when I first moved back to Iowa, I was trying to put together an independent film showcase show, and they were the guests on the pilot. And so, I've been talking about getting them, like when we had, Patrick on from 52577. Yeah. And doing something and talking with those guys, on a live stream, and talking about, writing a movie with, based on silence. Did you ever figure, imagine this would become a home theater audio demo? I talked to them about that nature and stuff, but like long story, they just opened a place in Iowa, just outside their hometown that is a big community theater that has a rooftop theater for that night during the summer when the weather's nice and you can go outside without being drenched in sweat. They have a nice, decent sized theater inside that opens up into a gathering space where they can have discussions and lectures before and after films. And
that was was the theater that Carl Ellsworth was talking about? Remember in the 25-hour show? Carl Ellsworth, he wrote Unhinged. He was on the show in the 25-hour show, and he was actually at a theater in very similar to that. It's like, I wish I had it still up here. But it's in the show. Oh, what the heck was that? It's like the last cinema or something like that.
Let me see. I don't know.
The last, I forget the name of it. But it was... Last cinema? No. Yeah, IMDb. Whatever it was, but it's that type of like they have like they had a lounge. They have state of the art theater. They had a rooftop theater. They had everything like that. But it wasn't. I don't think it was in Iowa.
That's it. It's the Last Picture House in Davenport, Iowa.
Last Picture House. There you go. Okay, that's the one. Yeah. And Carl was there. He was there from the show.
Oh, nice.
And he was heading there for more screenings. He was going to come back on late night, but he ended up drinking, I guess. Awesome. He didn't make it back to my show. But he was there for that. But yeah, that's the one that he was talking about. And And we were talking about on the show, like that's what we have to get back to for going to cinemas and stuff, because what we were saying that night or that day, whatever time it was like when we were kids or younger or whatever, it was like, going to the movies wasn't necessarily about the movie.
Right.
It was the experience of going to the movies, right? You want to go tonight? And especially when we were younger, you didn't even know. There was no internet. Like, what's playing? I don't know. We'll see when we get there. That's all it was.
Track down a newspaper or just go.
Yeah. Or you'd call the number. Like, hello.
I grew up pre-movie phone. It was, you'd call the theater itself.
Yeah. And if you had a paper, it was like, might not be accurate.
Yep.
They didn't get it, or, you know, you're expecting, there was no way to even know what's going to be at the theater next week. Yep. You had to drive by when you were with your parents. You look out the window, like, did they change the movies at the theater?
And, nope, and you have yet. To I've go already this seen week all. Because it might not be there next week and you don't know.
Right. You'd be like, oh, I missed it. Yeah. And it's like, oh no, when am I going to see it again? Yeah. When does it come to HBO? What's HBO?
Yeah.
That didn't even exist yet. Yeah. It's like, yeah, here we go. Old man cinema. Yep. There we go. Oh God. Yeah. The last picture. Yeah. That place is, but that's what I think that's what we're going to need to do. That's what more people are going to need to do.
I've been having a good time discovering a lot of the similar places around here. Like, we just lost one, and one of them has lost their lease and is having to move. The Grand Illusion Cinema, like these 25 seat theaters, though, they're great places. Yeah. There's one called the Beacon Cinema here that I love, and once a month they do secret cinema where it's free to get in, but you don't know what movie's playing until you sit down and they start it, you know, and it's just like, I love stuff like that. And, you know, we try to get out and support stuff like that. But then we also have like the CIFF Cinema, which is the Seattle International Film Festival or whatever. It's the nonprofit. They have several different theaters around the area, and they just, they bought the old Cinerama Theater, downtown and opened it up again. And it's just incredible. Actually, going to see The Brutalist there on Saturday. Rebecca and I are going, and Chris Deering's going to meet us there. Just a gorgeous theater. We saw Wonka there when it first reopened, and the image is just incredible. It's like a 91-foot screen, and it's just gigantic, and the seats are perfect. I saw Furiosa there as well. I don't get there enough, but, you know, they do all kinds of, they do new releases, they do art films and stuff like that. I just love going to those.
Yeah. It's like, when I was younger, it was, if I hit the lottery, blah, 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 I'd open a hockey rink.
Yeah.
I was so like, but this is one of those things, like, especially now, I think it's like, you know, ripe for it. It's like, if I had the ability, like if I hit the lottery and I could do something like this where it was like, okay, I don't need it to be a moneymaker. I'll throw the money at it and then let it go.
Right.
And then when I'm gone, it's already paid for and somebody can, you know, to just keep it going. But it's something like that, like The Last Picture House or something where you can just be there. It's like, talk about a project of passion.
Yep.
I'd just be there every day.
You know, I love it. Like in the Midwest where about 20 miles from where my mom and stepdad live now is they've got like it's a community. It's an old movie theater that was going to close down. It's right on the city square. It's gorgeous. It has these white leather seats that I always told her if they ever pull those out of there, I want them. I want at least five. God.
White leather seats. Talk about a glow.
They're like straight out of 2001 or something like that.
Yeah.
They have that real retro mod vibe to them. There's like a fully functioning waterfall in the lobby, and it's just like this really nice big old theater, but it was closing down, and basically the city set up a nonprofit, and it's all $2 second run movies. It's all run by volunteers. The people working in there are just volunteers that come in and they support the theater off the popcorn and soda, and they don't charge AMC prices. That's, you know, cheaply done, and they keep it going just because they love having that theater there and they don't want to see it go away. And it's just fantastic. It's a great community thing, and I love the fact that a community is willing to keep it open when you're watching, you know, 30 miles away, cineplexes are dying, but this beautiful old cinema is being kept alive by just people who want to keep it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And that's what it's going to take.
Yep.
It's like, you gotta create, well, like we were saying about The Last Picture House before, it's like, you gotta create the environment that people want.
Yeah.
Right. And you have those big, I mean, you want to see, you know, go into a showcase cinema and like the X Plus, and that's where I want to see my blockbusters and stuff. But that's for that. It's like, but on a weekly basis, if I had something that, that was, that had that kind of heart and passion mm-hmm. in it, you'd be there. Oh, it'd be like, you're like going to my favorite restaurant. Yeah. It's like, why do I go there? I go hang out with everybody at the restaurant. I'm not there. It's like, what's on the TV? I don't even like basketball. And I'm like, oh, I'm here to watch the basketball game.
Right.
Just to hang out with people, you know, or it's like, what's on that screen over there? Oh, it's a soccer game. I don't follow that, but oh, okay. It's I follow sports so yeah. I can follow along, but you're there for the environment. You're there for the experience of just being out. Yep. And to that point, it's like, you could do that with a theater. Yeah. You can do that with like, and that's what they're doing there. Whereas, you know, showcase cinema, it's like, get you in, watch the movie, get you out. They need to make the money. They, mm-hmm. it's a giant building. They've got taxes to pay. They've got all this overhead.
Yep.
And it's, you know, and it's part of it. Don't get me wrong. Oh, you need those, but at the same time, you know, a place to go and watch second run stuff mm-hmm. or hang out and talk movies with people.
Yeah.
That's what you
and
need.
And now Kaleidoscape.
Damn, I hope I hit the lottery.
And now Kaleidoscape has the program where theaters can set up a Kaleidoscape and license the catalog. Most of the, not all the studios are signed on, but that just opens it up and makes it a little easier for, you know, a cinema to have access to the films that the community wants to see. You know, you got 10 people that want to see a movie. Okay. It's going to cost you $10 each and you pick the movie.
Yeah.
Exactly. Something like that.
Yeah. There's ways around that too.
Yeah.
You can also be like, no, you don't, free admission. There you go. Yeah. So then you're not charging anything. So you're allowed to show what you want. Yeah. And then to your point, like, oh, popcorn and soda, you got to pay for that or whatever. But it's like, here you go.
Yeah.
It's like, it's like free admission, but you paid to park.
Yeah.
Oh, that's how it works. Yeah. I gotcha. Got it. Yeah. And it's like, they do that. I mean, the big businesses do that all the time, you know, and read the fine print and that's how you get the loopholes.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay. I didn't charge anybody to come in. I just charged them to park outside. Right. Oh, I gotcha. There you go.
Yeah.
So, and then seriously though, you want to come after me?
Right.
That's what I would like. And you put up a building or you do something like this, you go to show Top Gun Maverick in this little tiny place because you've got your Kaleidoscape. So you got a big screen. You did all the work and like, oh, you can't be doing what? I'm bringing notoriety. I'm bringing awareness to this stuff. It's like, you're going to shut it down. Shut me down. Okay. Just like, shut my podcast down. Okay. I made it. Somebody cares. Yeah. Somebody's angry with me. Oh no. Yeah. It's like, you know, come on. Could you imagine going after a little tiny boutique theater like that and be like the blowback on that?
It's true, but bars are busted every day of the week for playing music that they're not paying the BMI and ASCAP license fees. They go after, like, can you imagine it? No, but it happens.
But it'd be a big bar. It'd be a big bar. Not necessarily. Like that. Really?
Yeah. I know plenty of bar owners that have a little 30 seat, 50 seat bar in Iowa that have been fined by BMI and ASCAP for not paying music licensing.
Really?
Yep.
Like we were like, you run your Sonos system or something like that. Yeah. Like
any music you play in a business like that, that's why Muzak came around, because it's cheaper to pay the Muzak subscription of the elevator versions of popular songs than it is to pay the BMI and ASCAP fees to pay the actual artists who wrote the songs.
Yeah, but if you're doing it, what if you're doing it through iTunes and you bought it? You can't do it commercially?
Nope. If you read the fine print of your FBI warning on the DVD, it's not even like technically you don't, it doesn't, it's not, doesn't have anything to do with charging admission. It's a group setting.
Oh.
Like.
Right. Like more than a family is watching this purchase.
Public exhibition, I think is what they call it. But like, any business, if you're a business, you can't just, you know, play the radio Actually, the radio itself,
I think you can play the radio. Might be okay. Radio, yeah. I think it can. Yeah, because that's over the air.
Yeah.
But to your point, yeah. If you're playing like iTunes or you're playing your stuff, it's like, but again, every bar's doing it. It's, you know, you do that. Yeah. So, like they did, that's how they shut down Napster. They went after a few individual people. Yeah. Everybody else gets scared. And you'd be like, I'm done. Yep. I'm out. Yep. And that's how you kill something like that, because you don't want to get caught.
Right.
Right. And that's also what went on with Sapedi. That's what went on with Kaleidoscape years ago. Yep. They went after them. And it's like, if you get big enough, they'll come after you. But you're going to come out and go, oh, they're playing music in here? Yeah. It's like, you know, it's like, but it's.
Yeah. But that's what they'll get do. You if they want to. They'll send someone to random town, and they'll go through every business in that town and listen and then ask to see your license.
Oh, jeez. Oh, boy.
If you have a business license, you're basically agreeing that you'll pay those music licensing fees if you're playing music in your establishment.
Right.
You'll notice the little BMI stickers on a lot of windows of like a Buffalo Wild Wings or something like that. Actually, yeah, not Buffalo Wild Wings, because they're not playing music. They're paying the business DirecTV subscription, which you can't just go and set up a $49 a month home DirecTV system. You have to pay for the special business license if you're going to be playing it in your business, and it costs more because there are more eyeballs on it.
Yeah, for the television and everything like that. Yeah, I know businesses around here, same thing around here, like bars and stuff that have sports on. They have the commercial internet. They have the commercial everything. I wonder if that covers them, though. Like if you have commercial internet, you have commercial. I wonder if that's all inside of there.
I don't know. I don't think so.
Might be.
Could be. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'll deal with it when I go commercial.
I'm going to retire in a country where you hear about all these import records and stuff. My gosh, I just got this import of a David Bowie show from 1974, and I've never heard this show before, and I just bought it. Well, I don't know why I had to order it off the internet, because you ordered it from Italy where they don't have copyright laws. They don't protect the artists like they do here and stuff. So,
right. Yeah, it's the same in, I mean, like we go through with the movies with Kaleidoscape, with Zapedi, with all of these other, that's where you can burn, rip, do whatever you want all over the world. It's where, you know, United States is stricter, and it's funny because people they don't like it. Like, why are we so strict? But they, like you said, they're protecting the artists.
Right.
It's like everywhere else in the world, people are stealing it left and right.
Yeah.
And here we're like, no, we want the artists to get what they're doing.
Yeah. And you know, the thing, and you've had a Plex, I have a Plex, you know, all that stuff. And everyone will worry about, you know, when Kaleidoscape is going to get shut down, or, you know, they're going to go out of business. It's like, you know, Kaleidoscape went through that, and they now opened the store, and they're on the up and up with all of the studios that they sell, and, you know, the hardware price includes also the intellectual property protection. That's why you can't just plug in a USB drive to a Kaleidoscape to add more storage, all that kind of stuff. And it's like, they're like, well, I bought the disc and I own it, and so I'm just going to put it on my Plex. And it's like, you do have the legal right to back up your media. But when you're ripping it to play on Plex, you're defeating the copy protection, which is still illegal.
Right.
You can create a bit-for-bit copy of that disc, but you have to leave the copy protection intact, which will make it not play on Plex or MB or anything else. So when you throw that into Make MKV or whatever you're using, you're breaking the law. That's why Make MKV is still beta by donation only, and they're not selling it. It's still at version 0.51 or whatever, and you can run it for free. It's freeware. You just have to reset the license stuff every couple weeks or whatever, or you can, you know, donate it and buy it. But like, as soon as you rip that and strip the copy protection, that's still illegal, whether you think you know, yeah. Kaleidoscape is going to go out of business and Plex is the better option, you're still breaking the law.
Right. And it's, I mean, Plex, what they're doing there is that it's the Napster thing.
Yep.
And like we talked about it when Zapiti went under and or changed their name to Arvolution.
Yeah.
It's like, but we talked about it then. We're like, all it's going to take to shut down all the Plex stuff is what they did to Napster. It's like they, if they went after a few individuals, if it got big enough. Yeah. But I don't think, I said this, I don't think it'll ever get that big. Napster got big because it was songs. Everybody listens to music.
Right.
MP3s were just coming out. People, like, you think of it, like, MP3s came out and they solved that problem. Like, you could not go jogging with your CD player.
Right.
Because it would be skipping like crazy. Yeah. Your car, you'd be driving in your car and, like, you'd hit a bump and your music would skip. Yep. You were lucky if it stayed on the track, right? It's like, if you had a good, remember buying, you know, car radios and be like, this has it has a like 10 second buffer, mm-hmm. blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, this is a really good one. I can go over a dirt road and listen to my music. Yep. That was a big deal. MP3 came out, all went away, right? All of that went away.
It so all MP3 went away comes before out. That with mini disc though. I had an in-dash mini disc player because it didn't skip.
Yep.
Yes.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was, mini disc was, but mini disc never took out. You didn't have the library, right?
Well, you can, they're MP3 recordable. Put my CDs onto
it. Well, it, right. But it still wasn't as for the main consumer. It didn't take off. And what I liked about it is that I remember like it recorded and you didn't have to, remember you'd make a tape or something and it'd be like, all right, you have to plan out how much you want on each side. Cause I got 30 minutes. Oh crap. I did four songs. I got 5 minutes left or 4 minutes left, but this song's 4:30, blah, blah. The mini disc, the way it record, it would record like digitally. Mm-hmm. It just used all the space it had and you could get everything in there. It was so much more efficient.
Yeah.
But then MP3 comes out and then Napster and everybody's like, oh, what's this thing? And it was easy. It was simple. And then Napster comes out where you could shit because everybody's already putting stuff onto their MP3s. It's already on your computer. And now we're sharing all over the world. That had to happen.
Yeah.
That was the birth of iTunes.
Well, and yes, exactly. But the other thing about Napster and why it became almost, I mean, that just blew up so quickly. But it was also because the record industry, the music industry had been screwing people for decades with crappy stuff. That you couldn't preview before you bought it. And you
here's spend one good 18, song, you gotta buy a whole album.
On a CD and there's one good track and the rest is garbage. So why wouldn't someone just go, well, I just want the one good song.
Right.
And which is why iTunes was able to make it such a huge thing is, okay, we'll sell you the one good song. And labels fought that tooth and nail for the longest time. And they finally just had to cave and give in because.
Right. Cause the consumer said, no, I'll cheat. I'll go backdoor. I'll do whatever I got to do to get the one good song. I'll
do blanks and postage again of all the one good songs.
Exactly. And it's, I mean, that's where it's, I mean, that's the market. That's what ends up happening. Yep. The customer is going, I'm done. I found a way. Yep. Here it is.
Yep.
And that's why they went so hard at Napster. That's why. And to the getting to the movie side with Plex, I don't see that happening.
Well,
they don't make you buy 10 movies to get your one good
one.
They don't. There's not enough of us to create an issue.
Although there are plenty of movies that I've bought that have one good scene for demo and the rest of the movie's trash. But
that's true. That's a great analogy where you're like, oh my God, you gotta get this movie for this scene here. It's a demo scene, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, I gotta get it. And then you watch it. You never, ever watch it again. Yeah. Or when you do, you watch that scene.
Yep.
And it's like, most of my Kaleidoscapes like that. Most of it. I'd say like how many movies do I watch over and over and over and over? Percentage wise, it's gotta be under 10%.
I don't watch stuff over and over and over, but there's only a handful of things on there that I bought for the demo scene or whatever, like Borderlands Not as bad as a lot of people made it out, but not a great movie.
No,
but it's a demo scene from start to finish. What else? There are a couple that I've been looking at that I've been considering buying that I'm like, this is going to be a terrible movie, but damn, it's going to look and sound awesome. But for the most part, I'm not like Scorsese or something like that, but like my kaleidoscape is filled with some pretty good movies. And I like a lot of it is stuff that I bought classics that I had never bothered getting on DVD stuff I saw in film school and then like never bought when it came out. Cause I've seen that. That's a really good movie. I'd watch that again sometime. And so like one of the first things we did was we went through the AFI top 100 playlist on Kaleidoscape and we're like, okay, yep. Citizen Kane, 2001.
Yeah. I was just going to say Citizen Kane,
we just Casablanca. Watched Rebel Without a Cause a couple weeks ago. Yep. And I had never seen that one, but we bought it because we had to have it. It's in that list. And got a lot of Hitchcock on there. Like I've got a pretty,
same here,
pretty highbrow Kaleidoscape library.
Yeah. But what's funny is they do such a good, not just Kaleidoscape, but any of the places, they do such a good job at pricing your decision making in that if you could rent it for $2, you'd probably, what are you doing? All right. You could buy it for 20 or rent it for $2. Am I going to watch this 10 times in my life? Yeah. But what they do is they price it at $7.95 for a rental. Same with the digital. It's not just Kaleidoscape for anybody else. And then price at 20. If I watch this more than twice in my life, all right, I'll just buy it. And then it's not even a thought because it's funny because I've had this discussion too, is like, oh, home theater is getting too expensive and doing that. I'm like, movies have been around $20 to $30 for 30 years. Cost of living has gone way, you know, the income is gone way up. Yep. Everything else, home theater has stayed relatively the same price.
Dude, we used to pay $50 for a Laserdisc.
I know. I was buying weekly and I was making like $100 a week. It was $50 for a Laserdisc. 40 was like, all right.
Yeah. Oh, that's a no-brainer.
Oh, yeah. I was like, what's coming out next week? Yeah. It's like, oh my God. But yeah, $50 a I have over 200 Laserdiscs, $50 a piece. Yeah. And that's why, like, when I did my Kaleidoscape video, I was like, oh, you got to buy them all over again. That isn't a factor for people. Like, I bought VHS. I got probably 50 movies into VHS before I got my Laserdisc player.
Yeah.
Then you go to DVD. I got over 200 DVDs. Went to Blu-ray, over 200 Blu-rays. Went to 4K. I'm in the 400 or 500 of those. Yeah. And then I go to Kaleidoscape, and now I'm back up to the 400 or 500. And it's like, but at least with Kaleidoscape, I'm
upgrade.
As long as they're around, I'm done.
Yeah.
I don't have to worry. If I had Kaleidoscape before 4K, I would have been done, right? Yeah. And now you upgrade, like, what was it, $4.95?
$4.95 for the 4K version of 7. How much did people pay for the 4K UHD when they had already bought the Blu-ray, the DVD,
exactly.
Every version of it and everything. I had that on Laserdisc. I had it on DVD.
Yeah.
I think I got a free copy of the DVD from DTS though. But then like I had one of the Blu-rays. Yeah. I don't remember which one it was. But then I bought it on Kaleidoscape in HD and then, $4.92.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And it's for people like us, I wouldn't say it's a no-brainer, but at the same time, you think of what we spent before. Think of my Laserdisc collection. Think of my Laserdisc player. I paid $1,000 for my Laserdisc player in 1993.
Yeah.
Do the math. Yep. That's a Kaleidoscape system today.
Yep.
Easily.
Absolutely.
And then had to buy all the Laserdiscs at $50 a piece. Yep. $50 a piece back then, right? Yep. 1993. Look up what $50 is worth today.
Yeah.
That's what, $150? Almost $200?
Probably, yeah.
And you're like, this is crazy money. No, it's not. Yeah. It's like we're in the golden age because everything is so cheap, relatively speaking. Yeah. Right. And that's what's so hard. It's like, I get it for the people that didn't go through it. I understand. It's like, if you don't, that's the other part is it's, I think with the internet now, we didn't have internet back then. We didn't know what tech, you'd have to read the magazines to read about Runco projectors. You'd see the price tag right. And it was ridiculous. Now I think people think it's so expensive because like that great home theater is just so attainable and it makes people like it was so far out of reach back then. Like even a Kaleidoscape back in the early 2000s, it was like $40,000 to $50,000 for a Kaleidoscape system.
Yep.
Back that'd be like $100,000 now, right? It was so unattainable. You weren't jealous. You were just like,
right.
Wow, that would be great someday.
Yeah.
But now that it's just out of reach, it's so attainable, but it's just out of reach. People are like, and they get mad about it and then they get jealous. And that's where you get that back. Oh, it's true. It's so, if they just lowered the price, they'd have twice. Right. If they cut the cost in half, they'd have twice the customers. So they're making the same. What's the point?
Yeah, exactly. It's like,
you literally just did the math, like, just for you? It's like,
Yeah.
It's like, now they have twice the overhead, but they've made no additional money where they could just keep it the same, have you save some money and get your system.
And have like it be an aspirational product versus a commodity.
Exactly. Exactly. Yep. And it's like when I got mine, I was like, it was hard. It's like you have to do it's like, and when you finally get oh my God. Yep. But it's not everything's meant for me. Yeah. I was just telling somebody today, this young girl, and she was like, you do home theater? She asked me what I do for a living, and I was like, oh, I paint cars. She goes, oh, I thought you did home theater. I was like, oh, no. I go, that's kind of a hobby of mine. Yeah. I go, and she's like, oh yeah. And I'm like, yeah. And she goes, I was like, yeah, it's wicked expensive. And she's like, it is? I was like, well, it can be.
Yeah.
And I go, and I've been doing it so long, I'm into that part of it. And I start telling her the numbers. And so she's like, I go, well, you have a car. You just bought your first car and stuff like that. And I was like, but you know, there's Ferraris out there. I was like, you know, and that's what I'm in that part where I'm like trying to get to there. Yeah. And I was like, you know, it's like, and that's all it is. It's like, you can have a really nice home theater that works perfect. And then you want that extra percentage, you know, you buy a Ferrari doesn't carry the groceries any better.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
And it's easier to piece together a home theater over time than it is to piece together a Ferrari over time.
Well, yeah. Unless you watch Fast and the Furious.
Right. Yeah. Those are all held together with stickers.
Yeah. But you can't do it. It's the same world. Yeah. I've been in the car world. It's the same thing. Yeah. It's like, you know, and that's literally in the first Fast and the Furious. They blow away a Ferrari with their custom built, hand built car, you know? So same thing in home theater, right?
Yeah.
We do the same thing.
Yeah.
Like, oh yeah, you can't have that? Hold my beer. Be right back. So tell me about this screen.
Yeah. What do you want
to
know?
That was like, we talked about it a little bit, the weave and all of that and like your videos and you're like, you're shooting it in 8K and you did tell me about this.
Well,
I know a lot about it already.
Yeah. I mean,
it's so interesting.
We've seen the material at Cedia and stuff and we know that it's a good looking material, but rarely like, cause when I bought this, like, okay, I'm just going to back up. When I bought this screen, I was supposed to get UF2. It's a Seymour AV frame. The Neo that I have in there now is Seymour Screen Excellence. It's their custom installer channel. I was supposed to get the newest UF2, but they were out of that material and they were moving it to a higher quality, production facility because the one that they had been using to manufacture it was kind of iffy and on the overall consistency of the product. So he's like, well, we can wait. It's probably going to be a few months or we can just send you some of the UF and then we'll upgrade you when we get UF2 in. So they sent me UF. Again, the direct to consumer material, which is like, I think UF is a gain of 0.7 and then UF2 is 0.8. So I had a 0.7 in here. And so finally I got around to asking, I'm like, why don't you send me that UF2? And he's like, let's send you Neo. I want to have you take a look at that. Cause not many people get to see those two materials in there in the same setting. A lot of people have seen UF. A lot of people have seen Neo. A lot of people have seen them both, but not in the same room in the same with all other things
right.
the same. So, you know, we had been using the UF in here for 2.5 years or whatever, and I put it in, and the two differences were, obviously, I went to the Enlighter Neo material, but then I also added the black backing layer on it directly, which I didn't have on the UF. Everything back there is black. It's landscape fabric behind the screen. But this put it right on the back layer of the screen, right neck, you know, with the screen layer.
Yeah.
Within 5 seconds of the projector turning on, my jaw hit the floor. Like, it was brighter. It had more contrast. I was expecting to maybe be able to find a couple places and clips where I could really notice a difference. But even, you know, Rebecca came downstairs and she immediately noticed it. It was just, it was a big improvement over the old UF. Now, granted, again, the UF that I had was not the UF2 that you're buying today. That's a new formulation from a more consistent production.
You did like a double jump, really.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. The other aspect of it is the Seymour screen excellence, the Enlighter materials, they're not designed to be used with grommets, like the Seymour AV screens, which are just grommets and then the little, I guess it's not video anyway. They've got the little O-rings that go through the grommet attached to the screen frame. Yep. The Enlighter materials do have more give to them, and using that can make it really using grommets can make it really difficult to get it smooth all the way around. And it took me a couple weeks of take the screen down, fix a little area.
Right.
Go fix with that. Just, you know, stretch differently, put it back up, and then realize, oh, there's this spot over here I need to fix now. So it was a lot of back and forth. It's not an ideal situation, but I was able to get it completely smooth and taut without being overly tight, because you don't want to stretch it too much, because then you're opening up the weave and you're basically getting like a perf screen.
Distorting the weave.
Yeah.
Yep.
You're creating holes. You want to make sure the weave stays tight.
Consistent.
And then the black backing layer being directly behind the white layer instead of 3 inches away boosts, that it can, you know, have a direct impact on your contrast of the screen as well.
Yeah.
So that also made a huge difference. But like I said, I was not expecting the difference, but this weave is so nice and it's so tight. Like, you can literally get your face right up to it and let your eyes adjust for a minute and still not see it. I had, you know, my cinema camera, and I was trying to focus on the screen without any edging around it, and I couldn't do it. So I had to use the kaleidoscape menu to frame it and focus it and then turn off the projector. So I knew that I was focused on the material, and you can't see the weave even at that, you know, at that resolution of the camera. The camera's 6K. But YouTube only has 4K and then 8K. So I, you know, it was shot in raw format at 6K. Mm-hmm. So it's like 3 gigs per frame of footage at 24 frames per second.
Sheesh.
So it's very, very large, high resolution, low compression, edited on an 8K timeline. Cause I didn't want to, you know, I didn't want to shrink it down to 4K and then have, you know, lose the quality that I just recorded. And I didn't want to make a 6K sequence and then have YouTube have to process it out to 8K. So I edited in that 8K sequence and I used Resolve to scale it to that frame. And it's just, there's the weave is invisible. And it's acoustically invisible too. It's like a 1.2 dB drop that's flat across the frequency. So it's literally a click with your volume control rather than a re-EQ for putting a different material in front. So mean, it's just, it's, I've known Chris a long time. I've had a lot of experience with these materials. I didn't expect to see this big of an improvement. So yeah, it's just, I didn't want to say it, but I'm almost like, maybe I don't need a new projector now.
Yeah. Well,
that's another year.
Yeah. But that's what's fun about, like you said, like experiencing it with the same system.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And it's like not going, like if you'd gotten a new projector, a new screen and all this, you'd be like, oh, you probably wouldn't appreciate what you noticed. Yeah. Right. Honestly, that's one of the, I told you the other day, it's like one of the things I'm most excited for about my new theater is the screen.
Yeah.
It's projectors come and go, right? But your screen is kind of your foundation of your image.
You date your projector and you marry your screen. That's what Chris always likes to say. And it's absolutely true.
Yeah. And it's like, that's what, when I got, I have a Stewart screen and it's like, you know, the cinema, what is it? I forget the cinema 100, whatever, yeah. But it was, you know, for a dedicated room, this is what it is. I remember when I bought it, and I bought this thing over 10 years ago and I was like, man, it was like, you feel like you made it. Yep. And it was the one piece that I knew it way outclassed the projectors I was using, but it's that foundational piece. Like, okay. Anything I put on this later, is going to be, and that's why we did it.
Yep.
We did it knowing 4K was coming. I at the time I was running 720.
Yeah.
But Jim's like, just get I had acoustically trans, I had a daylight perf. Mm-hmm. So he's like, get rid of this, get this. And that's not acoustic. He hates acoustically transparent. Right. He does not want me to get that in the new theater. But I want the experience. Yeah. I'm going to take sacrifice, whatever. And it isn't that big of a sacrifice, but it is a sacrifice. But anyways, it's that foundational piece that every piece after that, I had 720, I went to 1080. When I finally went to 4K, it's like, I knew I was in, you couldn't do better.
Yeah.
And it was the only piece of my theater that I knew was like, there's no way to get better than this.
Yep.
It was, even today, it's like, that's not an issue for me.
Right.
But yeah, it's like projectors, technologies come and go, but the screens are gonna, you get a great screen and you're done.
Yeah.
You're done. And
yeah.
And it does make a difference.
Yeah.
For sure.
And you're gonna love the motorized masking aspect of it.
Yeah.
I mean, you have, obviously, the importance of masking and the difference that it makes when you put that in there, but to just click a button on your remote and have it just come right into where it needs to be for you, up and down.
Well, I want what we had at, well, you weren't there this year with what Chris had in the room. The
four-way.
Now. It all goes. Yeah. The four way, but you could do the two way. It all goes through the Lumigen.
Yeah.
And the Lumigen triggers.
Yeah. Them. And
I want that.
That's what I'm, and that's the one piece of the screen that I'm still waiting on. And they're just, cause they're printing their own circuit boards and stuff like that. And they're just perfecting that design, but they've been swamped with four way masking orders.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a good thing for them to have. But yeah, I'm excited for that because again, it'll take it off the Lumigen. I know there's also a Home Assistant integration in the works for the control system that will pull it. If you don't have a Lumigen, you can still, the Kaleidoscape sends, aspect ratio info into the Home Assistant, and the Home Assistant can then say, okay, move the screen masking to two to one or whatever it might be based on.
Right.
What's being shown.
So. But what's nice about that, like as soon as I did that demo this year and I'd done the demo a couple of times during the show and then we're there with Brett and we had our event there and Jim wasn't there at the time. He wasn't there for that event. So I was talking to Chris and I was like, does this, and I didn't get a chance to ask Jim about it because I didn't know enough about how the Luma Gym was doing it, right? But by the end of the day, I had figured, like, I had learned enough that I was like, wait a minute, does this do this, this, and will it do it on your Apple? Will it do your Apple TV? Will it do it on this? And he's like, oh, I didn't even think of that. Yeah. Or because we're doing everything, you know, at CEDIA, you do everything through the Kaleidoscape anyways. Right. And we're all used to the Kaleidoscape and flagging. And we've all seen that. Yep. And that's what it's part of why you want to get the Kaleidoscape. The lights come on, the masking moves. That's all great. Yeah. But what this is like, to me is like one of those game changing things where now it actually points out the flaw in the Kaleidoscape, where Kaleidoscape does like 235 or 240, right? They don't get the nitty gritty in the middle where the Lumagen will actually go right to whatever it's at. There's way more variables and it does them. And it does it outside of the Kaleidoscape. It does it through your entire system.
The Kaleidoscape does do all of those different aspect ratios. They just don't show in the movie details that you're seeing on your screen. But if you watch the info come through the Home Assistant, it's basically all of the aspect ratios you see in the on-screen display. Like if you're watching a movie that's in 2:1, it'll report as like 1.85. And then there's a little bit more letterbox on the screen. But what you see coming through the Home Assistant is 1.85 and then a trim value because so the Kaleidoscape will still tell the masking system the correct aspect ratio and it will be exact based on what's on the screen. Oh, okay. It's just they have the 240, 185, and 178, and then 166 and 133 are their base values, but all the in-between values have a trim adjusted to whatever the base is.
Oh, okay.
So it would still do it. But yeah, the Lumagen is just looking at the video signal and going, it's this.
Boom. Put it out.
Yeah.
There you go.
It's pretty great.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, and to be able to do it with your, you know, you're watching your Apple TV or every source and just be able to get that. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, it's that to me is like, that is like next level for me. That's where I want to get to and be like, oh man, it's just going to be, it's, you know, it is, it's attainable.
Yeah.
It isn't cheap, but it's there. It's right there. It's not crazy like it used to be.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, stuff like that was reserved for like, you had to be, you know, multimillionaire and just, you know, now it's like, you just have to be very disciplined with your savings.
The stuff ain't cheap, but companies like Seymour and Lumagen and some of these smaller companies are making it attainable. Where, like you said, before these were like the Theo Kalamarakis theaters that could afford something like this. And now it's not cheap, but it's attainable.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's like you said, Lumagen, or even think of like the subwoofer game was SVS.
Yep.
And it's like, it was everything before that was like Velodyne or whatever. And you're like, oh my God, to get that low, to get down sub 50 hertz was crazy back then. And now you're like, SVS comes in and everybody's like, okay, I can do this, which changes the market, makes everybody, okay, now what are you paying for at that point? Yeah. Why am I paying that kind of money? Oh, it's the finish, it's the design, it's this, that, and the other thing, but you can get it. And then, of course, now other companies will come in and undercut SVS.
Yep.
And it's like, okay, it's not as aesthetically pleasing, it just does the job. Just like, yes, it might not be the same quality, but you can come in and get that and maybe get to SVS someday.
Yep.
So it's great seeing stuff like, and like you said, and Jim's been, you know, I say Jim as in Peterson with Lumagen.
Yep.
It's like, he's been doing this for what, 20 years and just, you know, trying to improve the image quality in the digital age where Faruja was doing it back in the, you know, analog.
Yep.
And that stuff was never attainable to people like us, the market like us.
Yeah.
But now it's like, you know, Jim's like, all right, you can do this and you don't need it. But if you get it, you're going to see where your money went.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yep. Yeah. Very, so, very cool stuff available these days. Yeah, I feel like I've got most of it. The other thing we were talking about on text, when you order your screen, tell Chris at the very least that you want, the ability to bring masking panels in for the 133.
Yeah. You're saying that.
Yeah. Because you can use, you've got your top and bottom masks for wider aspects, but, he can, at the very least, they can embed magnets into your frame in the right placement so that if, you can either get them with the frame or buy them a year later, you get the magnetic panels that just snap right in. And, you know, if the magnets are already in the frame, it's an easy, all they have to do is make the panels and send them to you, and you snap them in, snap them out. And those work really slick as well. I was considering just getting the magnetic panels for this, but then you've only got one aspect ratio, or you have multiple panels, and I don't have a place to store the panels anyway. So.
Right. Yeah. It's like, I've got the panels, I will do that, but I have ideas for the 133. Yeah. I have, be able to pull in or do whatever, but it's, the option, like you said, it's like what Chris is doing. I've talked to him, seeing him at CEDIA, having him on the show. I've talked to him. I haven't said a thing about my theater because once you get down that rabbit hole, it's like, oh, what if it, and who knows by the time I get the theater, what tech he's going to have.
Right.
It could be, maybe this is the next Weave or whatever it is, but it's like, cause I know once I get down there, start talking about it, I'm like, okay, what do I got to do? Yeah. And I'll buy it and be like, all right, I got to put it in storage.
Yeah.
So, but that's part of the fun. Once you get there, you're like,
Yeah.
And I'll do it enough in advance that I won't be like waiting.
Right.
I'll do it. All right. I know I'm going to be putting a screen in a couple months. Then I'll start.
Yep.
Can't wait.
Yep.
Can't wait.
Yep. But. And they do have like, and I don't know what their policy would be on, the excellence materials for the AV frames, but they do have a craftsman kit is what they're calling it, available to put that grip track into the Seymour AV frames. So you don't have to use the grommets, but again, I don't know what the availability for the excellence materials would be. But there are definitely options there, and I've been blown away by this material. Like you said, you see it at Seymour or at CEDIA, and you're like, wow, that looks really good. But that's also a Barco projector or a Christie or whatever. And I've got a 7-year-old JVC, but damn, it looks good.
It does. And I said that to you after CEDIA last year when we were, and I was like, remember before CEDIA, I was like, nope, I was still, my design was still, a regular screen. Yep. It wasn't, acoustically transparent. And I'm like, and then you and I, even afterwards, were having the discussion about it. And I'm like, see, acoustically transparent on that Weave, whatever it is, it's going to look great. The screens are 180 inches. You're shooting a Barco or a Christie at it. It's going to look impressive. Yeah. It's going to, but when you come down to a smaller screen, under 150, that Weave is a bigger percentage of that screen. You know what I mean? So even the tightest Weave is a bigger percentage at that size. Yeah. So how does that affect the image? How does that affect the pixels? Right? Because the pixels can bounce off. These are all the tiny details that are bouncing around in my head. And then it was like you and I talking about it, and I'm sitting there going, but my goddamn show is about the experiences. And the experience I just experienced in this room with a giant screen and it going to the one, because you can't get that. You can't get that without a giant screen. Yep. And the only way you can get that giant screen is to go acoustically transparent. Otherwise you need to leave enough space above and below, or to the sides and below at least. And it's like, so I would go with a smaller screen for the sacrifice of what?
Yeah.
It's like that little bit of that percentage. Am I going to lose that, where it's like, No, because he's just going to be blown away by the sheer size and go, this is what I'm talking about. Right. And it's like, you know, I'm not trying to look for a witness in a murder case here and I need a perfect perception. I'm trying to enjoy Top Gun Maverick or, you know, something that, or Lawrence of Arabia, like it's never been seen, you know. It's you lose perspective when you start to get into the nitty gritty of the perfection.
Yeah. You know, and not to also take anything away from the UF, cause I couldn't see the weave from that either. And you know, it's all about viewing distance and using the right material for your viewing distance. You don't want to sit too close to a too big of a weave, but the, you know, honestly, If you can get into the Enlighter Neo, this material, you're not losing any gain from your 1.0 gain screen. You're gaining size and you're putting your speakers behind your, you know, you're eliminating the stuff in the room. I think it's a win-win-win, right?
There. Oh yeah.
And I think you're going to love it.
But, I know.
You know, that said, Chris, you know, Chris's theaters in Seymour's theater is actually in storage right now because he's building a new house, but his theater that I spent, you know, many nights watching movies in, he had two drop down screens. He didn't even use one of these. He had a scope screen that would drop down or a 16x9 screen that would drop down, and his speakers sat, his left and right sat just outside the edge of the scope screen. Yep. So, yeah. I mean, it wasn't even that he was putting all three behind there. It's not even that it has to be wall to wall. It's about what the angle, the right angles are. And I'll still go to my grave. Well, I guess I shouldn't say that because I'll experience more theaters, but to this point, that's the best sounding theater I've ever been in, commercial or private or anything, was Chris's home theater. His combination that he put together. It was the most realistic audio I've ever heard on a movie, whether it was rain or explosions or conversations. It was lifelike.
That's awesome. Yeah. It's, then that's all we're going for. Yep. And it's like, I'm not going to have it won't be as good as Chris's, but it's the best I can have.
Right.
And if I went to Chris's or like when we're at CD and we're in those $1 million theaters, and like I said to people, I'm like, mine's damn close.
Yep.
And they are the time it takes me to travel to Chris's and then come back home. It's like, yeah, there's a difference. It ain't that big.
Right.
You know, it's like, and it's stuff like that that makes you go, yeah, I still want to, it doesn't mean I stop improving my theater, getting back, but that's how you get to where you are.
Yep.
And it's, and that's the fun.
Yep.
It's like you see the little flaws and like, oh, I'm a little closer.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's like, you know, I've said it several times with the next level acoustic speakers that I'm running in here. When I finally tuned it after I got them all in and ran ARC and stuff, I'm not going to say that my room sounds like that Ascendo Seymour Storm room from 3 CDs ago.
Yeah.
But it has the same tonality, the same sonic signature. That was a 916 room. This is a 514. The imaging is going to be different, but like there are certain sounds from their demo clips that were just locked in my brain because that year I was actually working for that booth and I was in there, you know, running the demos for several hours a day. And so those clips were definitely lodged in my brain and they still are. And by the time I got this room EQ'd with the next level acoustics, it had that same sound. You know, it didn't have the extra 4 bed layer and 2 height layer speakers. It didn't have the same subs at that time. I still had a single sub. So there was unevenness in the bass, but like the Blade Runner 2049 scene when it's the Kaleidoscape calls it the skirmish at the waste processing plant where they're flying in and it's raining and she's glitching and they fire the plungers that stick to the side of the, that sound of the impact of those hitting the side of the car. I've completely matched that tone. Like that's the sound that I
Isn't
know.
Isn't that fun? Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah. It sounds like it just hit that wall and it has right. the same, it's the same sonic signature as those Ascendo speakers had. And it's, you know, it sounds, I love this room. For what I've done in here, it's come together really, really well. And it's just, it's not a cheap room, but it's a high performing room. And I think it performs above the price tag.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's, I think, I mean, people listen, everybody listen, they're all there. I mean, it's all above it because we fine tune it.
Yep.
That's what we're doing. Right. And it's that you're trying to get that in one way or the other.
Yeah.
And it's funny, like you said, you have that scene and it's like, that's me and my T2 scene. Yeah. And that's, I experienced that. I don't even know what the products were about way back then. It was like 92.
Yep.
It's like, and to hear that door get blown from one side of the room to the mm-hmm. other. And it took me like decades
yep.
to get there and to get that feel again. And it probably isn't exactly the same, but it is, it's the experience I'm looking at. I'm like that bang, bang.
Right.
And it's like that time. The bass, the tone, the everything yeah. that it comes across. And I bet you what's funny is now, especially if I could go and hear that exact theater that I heard back then and then hear mine, I'll bet you mine's better
yeah.
now yeah. just because tech is better. But your memory of that and how perfect it was and the first time you experienced, like, that was so clear. Yep. That was so perfect. And it's always there. Yep. It's like everything I ever do. Better believe that's what I'm going to be doing in the new theater. And if it isn't what I remember, I'll be like, I got to get this better. Yeah. How am I going to get that? I got to tone it. What am I doing? I got to recalibrate.
and that's the thing that I keep going back to though. You talk about, oh, you'll never stop upgrading. You're, you know, one of us. You're never going to stop upgrading. But I've not run room correction since I installed the Next Level Acoustics, except for I brought in the heights, and when I moved over to two subs, I did most of that time alignment and EQ and the mini DSP. And then I just used the Arc Genesis to blend it in. But like the core bed layer speakers, nothing, I've not changed anything. I've not tweaked them at all.
Right.
You know, I take that back. When I had the screen down, I put Visa mounts behind the left and right so I could tow them in just a little bit because they're very close to my okay. sidewalls. But I've not sat there and thought, oh, I need to tweak these speakers a little bit. These aren't quite right. I locked right. it in and it's been the same ever since.
Right. Yeah. It is. But that's the thing. Like anything else, if you don't hear a problem, what are you going to tweak it right. for? Right. It's when you start being like, this doesn't sound right or right. something. Like when I'm running the 7706. Every now and then, like a gremlin gets in there and shuts off the EQ, right? Mm. The Odyssey. And I'll be like watching a movie going, this just doesn't sound right. And you go and you check it on the app, like, it's off. Yep. What the hell? And it's that little, I mean, that room EQ just using the Odyssey is enough yeah. that we're so fine tuned with the theaters that, you know, I've never seen this movie before, but I know this isn't right. Yep. And you're like, damn it. All right. Got to start the movie over.
Yeah, but see, what I'm saying though is the fact that I've gone over 2 years now with these speakers and not ever once felt, oh, I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to re-EQ. Yeah. I should open, like, this is what tells me I can get to that point where I'm done. And the only thing I'll be replacing is something that dies. Like, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
I'm perfectly happy with my 7 or 8 year old Anthem processor, but eventually it's going to give out and I'll have yeah. to replace that. But I'm not sitting here Googling every day, what's my next processor going to be? What can I upgrade this to? This no. is old. I should upgrade no. it. I'm not like that at all. I'd much rather spend my time instead of finding upgrades. I'd rather find good movies to watch in here.
Yeah.
And cause that's the problem. That's what happened in my last theater, as I would watch anything and I'd turn on a crappy movie and 20 minutes into it, I'd be looking up going, I wonder if I should move those speakers back a foot.
Yeah. Yeah.
I wonder what I could do about this. How could I do DIY masking on my screen? I should get another sub. Like a crappy movie is what makes me think of what I could do in the room when what I really needed to be doing was just finding a better movie.
Yeah, but sometimes a good movie can make you be like, I got to pull everything out of this. Or a new tech, like a new codec will come out. Atmos gets upgraded to floor speakers. There's always something, because not only do we have the drive to do this, but the manufacturers have a drive to make money.
Yeah.
And they need to find a way to get us to be like, oh, crap, I need to do that. And so it's even if the market was stagnant, we'd still be looking for something, but the market's never stagnant. They're always looking for a way. HDR Plus or Atmos Plus or something's going to come out. We're all going to go, here we go.
I
take my money.
I resisted Atmos for a very long time too. I had it on my processor.
Right.
And I'm just like, I don't need it. It sounds great in here. I don't need Atmos. But then what I was doing was I had discovered Triad speakers, and I kept, for whatever reason, I kept coming across really good deals on bundles of used Triad in-walls. And so I would buy them. And then at one point I was just like, well, crap, I've got enough Triads here. I could do, you know, I could have done like a 13 dot whatever dot eight setup. I had so many of these speakers, and this was in back in Iowa, that I finally went and bought another cheap used Emotiva amp and started experimenting with it. And even then I was just kind of like, that's kind of cool. I guess I can kind of notice that, you know? But it wasn't enough at that point that I felt like I needed to do it here. And I did it here because I had all the stuff. And Next Level Acoustics was kind of saying, you should put these up
like
there.
Accidentally, oh crap, I got all the stuff. I might as well do it. Like looking around like, damn it.
Cause they were kind of like, cause you know, Next Level Acoustics and I have remained in contact since I put the reference cinemas in here, and you know, I'm going to be a demo theater for them for the Pacific Northwest. And so they kept, they kept urging me to put height speakers up. And so I finally did, and I enjoy it. I enjoyed it just as much before.
Right.
But you know, like, if I'm going to be a demo theater, and same with the subs, the SVS subs do really well in here. I have no complaints with them. I finally figured out I'd had a rattle from the front sub, since I put them in here, and I could not figure out what it was. I thought it was, I like swapping out light fixtures and tightening this and tightening that. And it turns out it was just a little bit Did you hear the ding? Something in the mini DSP was pushing that one just a little bit too hard. So I just backed off the volume, and it was actually rattling the enclosure. So I just, I backed it off a notch and all good. It's still great, but I'm going to go ahead and put Next Level Acoustic subs in here so it can be a completely on brand system.
Uniform system.
Help them out as a demo theater. Cause I'll sing those speakers praises left and right. I think they sound, they're fantastic. They really, really are. And anyone that's heard them has been really astonished with them and impressed by them. The problem is there's not enough. They don't have a demo showroom, all over the place where people can go see them, and they don't have the marketing budget of JBL or Perlisten is all over the place now. They don't have, they don't have the word of mouth because they don't have the marketing budget. And so trying to just get them another opportunity for potential customers to hear them because, I don't they want me to become a dealer, and I'm like, I don't want that hassle. That's way too much.
Right.
Like, I don't want to do that, but I've sold at least two sets of them for other people just by letting them hear.
Just word of mouth. And
I get nothing out of it other than, you know, I've got the good relationship with Next Level Acoustics and they help me out, but I don't do it because I'm selling them so that I can profit from it.
Right.
I'm doing it because I want the company to keep going because they're designing really good speakers. I love the flexibility of it. You know, mine are the on walls, and their in walls of this model was designed for 2x6 construction. I'm like, you should make a hybrid in wall that sinks into a 2x4 construction and only protrudes like 1¾ inches. And they're like, that's brilliant. And they made it. Steven Smith, Home Theater Gurus, is a dealer of theirs now because he was blown away by them too. And he needed a different form factor for some on ceiling speakers and wides, and they made them for him. Like, they can, their speaker models are more of a platform that they can adapt to whatever your installation need is. And, you know, mine are the 2 8-inch drivers and a compression tweeter. They have them with 4 8-inch drivers now, and they've made them into a sound bar. There's actually a passive LCR sound bar that is modeled. It's in this product line. They're going to send me one of those to demo as well. I got to figure out how I'm going to do it without tearing my theater apart. You know, it's all just like, they're so efficient. My thought on that review is, okay, I'm going to take the camera and go to Goodwill and buy a $25 receiver and use that to run this soundbar and show, you know, what it could measure with a cheap receiver, because these speakers are like 94 dB sensitive, like, or signal to noise. Oh, it's doesn't take anything to run them. They're really efficient, and the output and dynamics is just amazing. Like, it's a really, really well-designed speaker.
Yeah. No, I what was it? A year ago or so? Over a year ago, I was trying to get over there. I saw him on Giles. I talked to him after that. I jumped into his chat. Mm-hmm. I was talking to him when they were on there, and because they're right around here. And I'm like, I got to get over there. They have two demo places here, two different.
Yeah.
I mean, what was it? One's right by where I work. I just got to get there. But
you know what? You should call them. I literally talked to them this week. I think they're going to bring Chris Deering out there to calibrate their projectors in their showrooms. You should just meet up.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, I have his number. We texted, we talked on the phone. I've talked to him, like, after you and I talked, that was a while ago. So yeah, I'll get in touch with him.
Yeah.
Especially if Chris is coming out, that'd be great.
I don't think they had a date set yet, but they've been talking to him about, cause they just upgraded the Bravia 8s in their theaters.
Oh, okay.
So they're going to bring Chris out and calibrate them, I think. So
Chris is going to, he hates Sony's.
He hates Sony's as much as you love Sony's.
It's so funny. But all right
man,
that was good.
Yeah, it's dinner time on the West Coast.
I know, that's why your watch dinged.
My watch dinged because my Iowa State Cyclones are second in the country in basketball. And my buddies from high school and college were texting during the game. Apparently we just beat Kansas.
Oh,
and we're down our top scorer tonight. So
there you go.
The only game we've lost this season has been to the number one Auburn Tigers.
Oh.
And we lost by one at the buzzer.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Wow.
In like an early season tournament.
Yeah. So what, you're up by one, they hit, or were you up by two and they hit a three?
We were up by two and they hit a three.
Oh, that's brutal.
Yeah.
Oh, awful.
Yep.
You're like, oh.
Yeah.
That's worse than the helmet catch in the Super Bowl. No, it's not. No, it's not. No, it's not. That was the worst thing ever. oh, hold on to it. Yeah. Rodney Harrison. Yeah. He still has nightmares. But. But.
All right, man.
Wow. I'll talk to you soon. Yeah, definitely going to be talking to you. Actually, we're going to be talking real soon now.
Yeah.
But. Yeah. But thanks. Yeah. This has been great.
You bet.
Great. And thanks for sparking the interest on the screen that I can't purchase yet, but great.
How far out are you?
Oh, God. I'm probably a few months from being in the house. I'm hoping April, May in the house. And then once I'm in the house, I'll have priorities to finish inside and then really get into the theater. And I'm like, I really can't wait for that.
Yeah.
I really can't wait just to, I don't care how long it takes, but it's going to be fun. And I will have a theater, like I'll have a small theater so I'm still doing the show and everything, but the big new theater is going to, I'd rather take my time, do it right than, you know, and it, even like if it takes longer, you're just like, all right, I just thought of this idea. Let's do this. And just the craftsmanship and everything, not just rush to get it done.
Yeah.
Like I've done in the past and everybody does.
That's my downfall is I start off with best intentions of taking my time. And then all of a sudden it's like, shit, I really want to watch this movie. I'm just going to finish this and then put the projector up and go. And then it becomes the evolution.
You got a projector, a screen and a 5-gallon bucket and off and running. Yep. You're just sitting on that watching. You're like, nothing got done.
My theater in Iowa, I had torn everything out because I've spun it 180 degrees and I put the screen on the other wall and I wasn't planning on it, but then I was making really good progress and I was like, ooh, if I really bust my butt, I could get this and done and I could watch our football game tonight. And it still lives on in my ABS forum build thread for that theater that I rushed and rushed and rushed to get it up so I could watch this game and we lost 71-7.
Oh, jeez. Oh, God. Should have taken my time. That's awesome. That's awesome.
Check this guy out.
Oh, jeez. What's his name?
That's Bodie.
Bodie?
Yep.
What is he?
He is a Cavapoo. Okay.
What the hell is a Cavapoo?
Cavalier, King, Friesian or whatever, and Poodle.
Oh, okay.
He's a stud.
Okay, I see Poodle.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. He's adorable.
Yeah.
He looks like, for people listening to the audio only, he kind of looks like, what do you call him? Portuguese water dog, whatever. But he's brown. Like that. My sister-in-law has two of them, and they're dark brown. Yeah. He's like a Chewbacca brown.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Beautiful.
Yeah.
Look at him. Floppy ears.
Yeah. All righty.
Cool. All right. Thanks, Travis.
You bet. Have a good night.
Bye, Bodie. You too, buddy. Take it easy, everybody. Thanks for listening. Thanks for participating. Let's see where
just press play.
Upload it. Yeah. Yeah. There you go. All you got to do, it's all set. I don't even have to hit buttons. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
See ya.
Hey, Fred.
This has been a Hey Fred production with theme music by Jeff Bernhardt and Throne Vault Productions.